just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 337, the Thanksgiving Day Parade Show. I'm Lisa Sheps, along with the incomparable and beautiful and wonderful co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro. You're listening to us on KOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 on your FM dial, streaming live all around the world on KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
My turkey baster, baby.
It is Wednesday, November 25th. And on today, oh, and that's in the year of 2015. On the show today, we have our very, very, very dear friends from Ground Floor Theater talking about their show, Parade. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Atlanta, and in Chicago. Don't go away.
My turkey baster, baby.
My turkey baster baby.
That was a pretty hilarious choice there, Miss Lisa Sheps.
Well, you know why I chose that, didn't you?
Because it's Turkey Day.
Because it's gobble. Yeah. Did I ever sing you my?
You have a turkey song?
I have a turkey song. Would you like to hear it?
I know the birthday song. No,
okay,
please.
Here's the turkey
bring
song.
Bring it to me.
And this is actually a tribute to my very dear friend, Dean Driver. May he rest in peace. You ready?
I'm ready.
Here it is. Gobble, 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 gobble. I don't like Thanksgiving Day. Gobble, gobble.
Lisa Sheps, your repertoire of holiday classics are phenomenal.
In loving memory of Dean Driver. I love you, my friend. I wish you were still with us. So I am checking in with you, Nicole Shiro.
I'm here. I've been a little crazy.
You have been. You've been crazy. I saw you early this morning. And then you had to rush off to go be with Equity star, Mr. Dale Watson.
Yes, yes, yes.
And television star today, yes?
Yes, he was co-hosting the morning news this morning.
Yeah, the MN, as we call it.
The MN, yeah. We have the, you know, because I do the Ameripolitan Music Awards
you
with
do.
Him. But the nominees are out, and the voting begins on Gobble, Gobble, Gobble Turkey Day.
Did I get...
Because the people get to vote.
Did I get nominated this year?
No, Lisa, you and I are not in there. There is a
Darn.
DJ category.
We should get that.
I don't know what... Cause I think it's because we don't play Ameripolitan,
yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
We're stars in Dale's book. How
whatever.
About that?
So I want to remind... Oh, before I remind folks, thank you, Tracy Schultz, for another wonderful remix.
Yes.
And I love the Elephant Room. Do you love the Elephant Room?
I love that place. I used to go to it when I still lived in New York. It was a place
yeah.
I went to.
And I love elephants.
Well, you know, I
and you know,
elephants.
And
you know, I've
everybody here knows the answer to this.
What?
Like, what did Tarzan say when he saw the elephants coming over the hill? Here come the elephants.
Here come the elephants.
Okay.
I love, but, you know, that was my dream when I went to Thailand.
To be an elephant?
I got to Cirque du Soleil and roll in the trunks and ride them and touch them. And elephants rock.
They're hairy.
They're weird
feeling. They've got weird hair.
They're bristly.
They're bristly and
but
they're
magnificent
and they're,
creatures
and they're nosy
and they're very
okay,
well
okay nobody
loved
got
there.
That one
I
all
got
right.
it
I want to remind folks that if you aren't listening to the podcast you should the podcast is very good. You get to hear things that you don't get to hear on the broadcast.
It's what the cool kids are doing.
It's where the cool kids are doing it. So the really cool kids are both listening to this broadcast on 91.7 FM or KOOP.org, and also tuning in and listening to the podcast and getting backstage at Offstage and the answer to the trivia question.
That's the most important yeah. part, you know?
So you can get us on iTunes. You can subscribe to there. And while you're there, what should they do when they're there?
Could you, like, give us a rating?
Please give us a review.
Tell us how awesome we are. You wish
Cinco
there was
Estrellas
more.
Would be great.
Yes.
Would be muy bueno.
Muy bueno. How about
so
I
you
say
can get us on iTunes. You can hear us on Stitcher. You can also... Oh, we can send it to you.
Oh, my gosh. Best way to get it? You can go to offstageonair.com, enter your email in the little box on the right-hand side, and you know what?
We'll send it right to you.
Yeah, we just arrive.
Thursday morning. We're in your mailbox. You got it.
Lisa and Nicole, come on now.
Excellent. Well, let's introduce our guests.
That's a thankful Thursday.
It's a thankful Thursday. So our first guest is Director of Ground Floor Theater, Lisa Sheps. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I was going to do that. You took my thunder away.
Oh, sorry. But our real guests are Vincent Hooper. Hi, Vincent.
Hey.
Dale Sandish.
Good afternoon.
Okay, and get closer to the microphone when you talk or else we cannot hear you. Liliana Sweeten.
Hi there.
And Chelsea Manasseri.
Hi, how are you?
Or I like to say it, Manasseri.
That's actually exactly right.
I was about to say that's correct. I love it. Hello.
Well, I lived in Italy for a long, long time.
Nice.
So I want to start today sort of and talk about, we have some shows opening, but I want to skip that first and go straight to the Sitz Probe.
Trivia?
Huh?
I'm just kidding.
Oh. Is there trivia about Sitz Probe?
No.
Okay. No, we're going to go straight to the Sitz Probe. I don't think a lot of our listeners know what a Sitz Probe is.
You know, I don't think we've talked about it a lot.
Who here can say what a Sitz Probe is? Anybody?
Well, it's not about aliens, right?
Chelsea knows. Does anybody else know?
Sure.
Yeah, go, Dale. Yeah.
Well, Sitz Probe is when the performers, the actors and singers sit and listen to the orchestra play the score, and also sing along.
For the very first time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, I bring it up because they just released a video of the fiddler, the new fiddler that's opening their Sitz Probe. Mm-hmm. So I want to just take a moment to listen to this, and it's got some interviews with some of the cast members.
It was the most magical day. I mean, we've been rehearsing with the piano for so many weeks, and just to have all the instruments, I mean, you know, I just start weeping every time I hear those strings and that klezmer clarinet. I mean, it's just so multi-textured, and it really puts you in Russia at that time. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
How did this tradition start? I'll tell you. I don't know.
The Sitz Probe is always the most exciting day of the rehearsal process because we finally get to hear the sound of the actual piece mixed with the sound of the actors, and it's also really special because it's the first and only time you kind of hear it unamplified as God intended it.
The best part of today is getting to hear the orchestra. I mean, they're right behind us. They are unbelievable. I still have no words. It's just the most exciting.
The Sitz Probe.
Ah.
So that's actually really exciting. That video is on our site, offstageonair.com, and you can see the whole thing. I just took a couple of little pieces of it. But you really get a sense of what the Sitz Probe is, and it's really exciting. Dale, I know you've experienced a Sitz Probe. Has everybody here experienced one?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Y'all have any stories? Did you like to regale us about any particular interesting Sitz Probe? Nodding doesn't work on the radio.
Okay, well, I'll tell you one. There's one that I did in Moscow at the Prokofiev Children's Theater.
Was that Moscow, Ohio, or a different
one? Actually, no, this was the one in Russia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was doing Pietropansky.
Ah,
da. And we heard the Russians play those violins, and it was very exciting for us to hear the orchestra. They were amazing players, for one thing. And in that hall that we were in, it was glorious.
Yeah. So the Sitz Probe is very exciting.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about it more,
I think we have.
But not as much like the swings. We talk about the swings a lot. I would think we would Sitz Probe a bit more.
Well, I don't know, actually. So those of you that have done Austin productions, do we Sitz Probe here?
Mm-hmm.
We do. Okay.
We also Vondel Probe.
You what probe?
Vondel Probe. It's like a Sitz Probe, except for you do all your blocking.
Yeah, so we may be experiencing that in a couple of days.
Actually,
but there's a benefit to not doing your blocking. I think there's a benefit to like just really sort of absorbing all the orchestrations and stuff like that you don't get during rehearsal. I was hoping that I went on to TheaterWords, the TheaterWords site.
Yes.
I was hoping they had Sitz Probe, but they didn't.
They didn't?
No. So I almost got in stumble through, but it was too visual for it to work on the radio. that's the Sitz Probe. So email in your questions about the Sitz Probe. Does anybody know what the word actually means in real, like how?
No, I was sitting here. You know, I was sitting here going, I wonder where that word actually came from, or is it derivative of, or is it?
Well,
it has
to do with when you're like asking questions in a seated position, you're sits probing.
I think it's German, right?
Yeah, it's German.
I was like, it's got to be German because there's a Z in there.
If I had done my homework, I would have looked it up before the show started, but I didn't. So we did have an opening. I don't know if it's considered. It's off Broadway.
I think it was off Broadway
at the Signature, and it's Steve that was directed by Cynthia Nixon, and that was reviewed by Brent Brantley of the New York Times, and it's
your boyfriend.
No.
You've broken up?
No, he never was my boyfriend.
Isherwood.
Chris Isherwood is my boyfriend.
I won't tell Brantley then.
Brantley was my boyfriend. Anyway, so this is a five actor piece with some people playing multiple characters. It talks about the LGBT community, and it's one of many shows that have opened up in New York. And we talked about this, I think, last week about how LGBT theater is changing a little bit.
Yes.
From the days of just, you know, all about death and dying to more, and I'm using air quotes, normal life. And this mm-hmm. This goes along those kinds of things. So it's basically five relatively aging four gay men and one woman that are sort of experiencing what it's like to lose their sex appeal. Great review by Mr. Brantley. And there's also a section, there's a whole bunch of different, it's called Steve because there's several people named Steve or Steven. So there's a Steven, there's an Esteban, and there is a Steve. So there are all sorts of things in there. But it looks like a really good show. And Cynthia Nixon is really finding her feet, is she
She's
not?
She's fascinating. She's also in a movie right now playing a woman who's dying in this relationship with her son. She's been on the press circuit. I want to say it was the Today Show. I can't remember. I'll have to find it. But she had a really great interview where she talked about that role plus directing this.
Right.
And I'm like, man, she is just one fascinating woman. I just find her, she's mind-boggling. You know, you're like, oh, you're so talented at that. And then you see someone, oh, and you're she's like a J.J. Watt and a Hugh Jackman.
Rolled up into one little...
One little wasn't, petite package.
Wasn't she doing two Broadway shows at once at one point?
Yes. That's yeah.
that real thing. And
she talked about how
we talked about her. We read an article. She did about that.
Was able to actually do the curtain call for both. Yeah,
yeah. Yes, because she would run in between and do it.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine.
She really is just a fascinating person.
She is. So
yeah. Hats off, Cynthia.
She keeps working. She may make a name for herself.
I look forward to more of your work.
Radio City Christmas Spectacular opened.
Yes, it did.
It got reviewed, which I think is sort of interesting that they review it.
They review it every year, and it's not really any new.
It's always the same, basically.
It's the same show right now.
Well, it's basically the same.
They tweak.
They every now and then they contemporize it. They had here one of the kids says this is lame, and that's like an updated word from 1937, which is when it opened.
Yeah.
But everything else is pretty much the same.
Which is fine, because I get angry when they take... I was angry the one year they took some of my stuff out that I really like, so...
Yeah.
I'm
well,
okay with it.
Yeah, we like... Has everybody seen the Christmas Spectacular?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They... I don't know if they still come here. They
no,
used to come
they
here.
They haven't
their
been
touring
here
show.
In like 3 years. Remember, they came... And we're guests on this show, and they wore their outfits.
Yeah, they wore
for
their
us.
Outfits when Stuart was here.
No, I was here.
Oh, yeah. Well, they
multiple
used to come
times,
every year.
But yeah, I've been here for it too.
The only one I have pictures of is with Stuart.
No, I have a picture of you, me, and them.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Mm-hmm. We got an ornament and
a
scarf from them that year.
Here's the deal. I don't have a picture of him.
I will share that picture with you, Lisa.
I don't. I like to hold this.
I am sorry
over
that I have been holding on to that for 2 years. That is
that's terrible.
No bueno.
So there was also another show called The Important Hats of the 20th Century that opened. Did you read this review?
I read the review, and then I was like, I actually started reading some pictures. I feel like I knew the show was coming out. I read about it, and then I let it slip through the cracks for a bit. So.
Well, it's interesting. It's a straight play that talks. It takes place in the 1930s, and one of the people has the ability to go forward in time, and they're hat designers, and they go in and they see what's happening in the future, and they design you know, like the hats of the 1980s. Of the
19- yes.
No, I'm sorry, 1998. And
we had an 8 in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually thought it was 80s, so there you go.
Yeah. So, but so, so they he talks about like. So this the review was sort of
eh. I was like everything like eh.
Yeah, but it's talking about the cop who's talking to it's a mystery. It starts in with a sort of a noir kind of mystery about scientists and things like that. A stolen hat that is a time traveling hat.
Yes.
It's sort of
kind
like,
of like Edwin Drood meets, what's that movie with Christopher Reeve that he kept, was in time?
Oh, a Wrinkle in Time?
No, not Wrinkle.
Not A Wrinkle in Time. What is it?
You know which one? It's yeah, like something like with it. An S. It's yeah, like a what? It. Oh, got it. And it like goes on forever and ever.
Ever and
you're
and
like,
ever.
Buddy, just yeah. go back in time and
but
find
this was
lady.
Directed by Moritz van Stupenagel, who's been
okay,
doing
okay, that's
an awful
a great
lot.
Name.
Yeah, he's actually, we've talked about him yes. a lot as well. And I little shout out to Jen Bensky, nay of this program and yes. others. Because her and I were talking about my upbringing, and so I'll throw this out to the group. Has anybody heard the term ready to wear?
Yes.
No.
That was a.
Yeah, I'm not talking to you.
Okay.
Because you know it. You absolutely know pretty much everything.
No.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I grew up in retail. My parents had a ready to wear store, and it was so ready to wear is part of my vernacular. And I talk about it.
They
all
use
the time.
It on Project Runway all the time. So I'm kind of like
Ready to wear is basically when you everything is now ready to wear. So when you go and you buy clothes,
not
at
everything.
Macy's,
couture is not ready to wear.
Right. But what most normal people go to is ready to wear. So you go to Macy's, you go to Benetton, and everything. You buy it and you put it on. It's ready to wear. That was what my parents' store was a ready-to-wear store, but there were a lot more stores back in the day that did more couture. Anyway, so they talk about ready-to-wear in here, and I was surprised when I was talking to Jen Vensky about my upbringing and talking about the store and his ready-to-wear, and she said, I have never heard that term, and that was so strange to me because it's just part of one of the words that I grew up with. A little bit yeah. more about Lisa Sheps.
Dun, dun, dun.
Back to Moritz von Stupenagel. People will know his name because he directed Hand to God.
Yes.
That's what I want to talk about. And we talk
I like
about,
when you say his name, and I like saying it's a great name every time.
I like saying that too, almost as much as I like saying.
I hope he keeps that name.
I would assume he is.
Uh-huh.
So we talk about words, and there was a word in here that I almost brought up, and I will bring it up, actually.
I was
actually.
Like, why aren't you bringing
well,
it up?
Well, because it's a word that oftentimes people believe it is, the definition is opposite of what it is, and that word is nonplussed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it sounds like I'm nonplussed, it means it doesn't bother me at all, but it actually means exactly the opposite.
Yes.
It means I'm plussed. All right, that's that.
Today, words.
Today Lisa for Sheps. You, tomorrow for me. yeah.
Oh my God.
So you
I've
sent
never
me
heard
a thing. I didn't
Friday.
Really look at it, but Friday Night Lights is coming to Broadway.
They're making Friday Night Lights a musical. Interesting. Hmm. Yes, it's one of the. It'll be an
is
underground
Connie
musical.
Is Connie Britton going to be in it? Because I need
no,
her to be in it.
No, but what was the name? I cannot think of
the
actor's name.
The guy that plays the paralyzed football player.
Scott something. He's playing the coach.
Yeah.
What? Yes. So they actually have people from the television show in the musical. It's going to be kind of a. Oh my gosh, I cannot think of the word. Kind of like how Heathers was and stuff like that. It'll be a dark, spoofy, like Silence of the Lambs. They're not going like full
okay,
out,
Friday
like,
Night
color
Lights
purple
was not Silence of the Lambs. I would not put those in the
no,
same.
No, I'm talking about how the musical is a parody. Thank you. Somewhat of a parody.
Oh.
Whereas like The Color Purple is The Color Purple. It's not
oh,
a parody.
I see.
They're
I
taking
see.
The television
oh, so they're
and kind of
doing
a... Yes, it will be a little tonguey and
okay.
cheeky. It's going to be tested out in Los Angeles. There wasn't a lot out on it. Just was announced yesterday, but Scott, and I forget your last name.
Bayo.
I'm sorry. I wish it was Bayo.
Joplin.
He will be playing the coach. So the player will now be playing the coach, which I think is kind of cool and
yep.
interesting.
Yep.
So I
actually watched that program.
But
oddly enough, I didn't watch
Britton
it right away.
Could be in it. She sings her own stuff on Nashville. A girl
that's
can
true.
Sing.
She does.
So.
Yes.
Connie,
did everybody
hello.
Watch Friday Night Lights?
Nope.
Some yeah,
nope.
some of
it's
it.
It's good. Dale Watson was in it.
It was good. I did not watch it for a long time because it was sports, you know, and I'm not into
I'm
sports.
Just shocked
but
you
somebody
did.
Somebody said, you know, the press on it was so good. I actually accidentally watched the last 20 minutes of it, and I went, oh my gosh, this is good. So then I binge watched everything, and then I was just really thrilled that, you know, Franz Hamburgers was a main spot.
I was like,
spot.
It's filmed all, it's here, like, so all, yeah.
Singing in the Rain is coming to Broadway.
Yes.
Currently it's in Paris, and when I first saw the headline, I went, because I saw it when it opened in 1989, 86. When was it, Dale?
Early, mid-80s.
Yeah, it was
80. It's in here. It's in here somewhere. But it's not. It's a different. It's a different story. It's not that. It's not that book. It's a different book.
So, is it a new book?
It's a new book.
Interesting.
They say it follows the film more better than the Broadway thing did. The Broadway thing. The Broadway show of 85. But it is now currently open in Paris, and it's moving here. It is currently, it's a production of Théâtre du Châtelet. Châtelet.
Oui, oui.
But I think that's great. And this is the same. This is the Weinstein Live Entertainment. He brought in, he did bring in Finding Neverland.
Right.
So he's bringing it in, and this actually, the same company that did it, Théâtre du Châtelet, did American in Paris as well. So this will be their second.
Oh, yeah. Well, then they had success with that one. Yeah, so
they did.
Yes, they did.
They did. But it was funny when he talks about what's his name, Harvey Weinstein. He said he went to, after his dad died, he went to a double feature of Singing in the Rain and American Paris. And at that time, he was not into American musicals at all. And after seeing those, he sort of changed his mind, and he's always wanted to do it. So
there's something very, very special about both of those movies.
Mazel
and
top.
It's,
well,
it's interesting. I know. And it's interesting when you're watching them with people who have never watched them before, you see the magic that they experience from watching that movie. And there's very rare, you know, there's a few movies that I can say that about. Both of those are just uniquely special.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's really cool.
And then,
I would not have expected that from Harvey Weinstein. So, like, that's a neat little story.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Beautiful. Who knew? We also had an opening of, has anybody read Confederacy of Dunces?
No, but I know Nick Offerman is that.
Nick Offerman's in it, in Boston. Yeah. So, Confederacy of Dunces is a book that is wildly popular. Lots of people. Have you read it, Chelsea?
I did a scene from it in college.
A scene from
it? Yeah, okay. I had a.
Because it's never been a play before. And
it hasn't. It's like just a book. But
they've tried to make several movies out of it. And the dialogue, actually, the critic who wasn't crazy about this production was faulting the dialogue because they didn't use the wonderful, thick, beautiful dialogue that John Kennedy Toole did in the book and rewrote it. And they said it was only when the very few times that they used dialogue that they pulled directly from the book did it have any kind of legs at all.
Right.
I just need to let the guests know that the listeners cannot hear you. I'm getting texts from family members right now all over the U.S. saying, your guests are soft. Okay. I can't hear
them. Well, that would be my problem, so I will just turn their volume up. But they sounded fine to me. But thank you for the text, whoever's texting. I love being criticized over the air. It's really one of my favorite things, and I'd like to thank you for doing that, Nicole.
I didn't mean that in a bad way, but if they couldn't hear, I was thinking.
I'm so happy.
Don't other people want to?
I'm so happy that you didn't slide me a note. That would just not have been a good way to do it.
I've never slid you a note on air.
No, we
I could.
You
do
know
that.
What? As we talk about here on this program, because we engineer,
you like
we
to
do
make
our own
the
thing,
sausage.
We
on
show
air,
how
so
the sausage is made. So I have absolutely no problem.
I was
with
just
it.
Pulling out the casing. I'm
I
so sorry.
Thing, but if I'm looking at the levels and they're actually zinging in the red, but. But I did turn it up.
Well,
is that the
you
show
know
that's
what?
Coming zinging in the red?
Zinging in the red.
Maybe I should tell everyone to go get their hearing checked.
Maybe. person texting is criticizing.
Liz. we'll call her out.
I'm thrilled that she's listening. I also, here's another, I love showing my ignorance on this show. So another word that I had to look up. So the sentence is, although Mr. Hatcher's made an honorable attempt to capture the Rabelaisian spirit of this novel.
Is that with an S or a Z?
Rabelaisian with an S.
With an S.
Okay, so does anybody know what that means? I'll give you a hint. The R is capitalized. So go.
It's a reference to, he's a writer, isn't he?
He's a novelist.
Yeah, he's a novelist.
But I know, do you know him the same way I know him?
I know him from the reference in the Music Man.
Music Man, exactly.
Is it okay. It's like, yes. So the name is very familiar, and that's what it's from.
I've never read anything by him.
I haven't either, but I remember that reference in the Music Man.
Exactly. I went totally there.
So did you look him up to know what he really was writing about?
Yes, I looked him up and I read some of his some of the things he wrote, but I'd never heard of him, so I just closed the book.
He was that intriguing.
Here's another word that I'll test you on. So this really isn't about theater. This is about vocabulary. But perhaps, because this was a word that I should have known, but I looked it up anyway. But perhaps inevitably, in clamoring from pages of Toole's capacious book. Capacious. What does capacious mean?
Capacious. I might be wrong on this. Capacious means vast, spacious.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. Anyway,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
So not only was Stauffermann in this book, and he didn't get great notices from this reviewer, but Anita Gillette was in the book as well,
really?
In the play as well. And she did good. The set was a minimalist. He sort of criticized the set in the props. There were no props, zero props, very little set. And he said,
must have been easy for the prop designer and manager. Wow.
I gotta see what all this minimalism is in a bit. Let's try that again. Take two. All this minimalism is a bit at odds with the maximalism of the book, because the book is very rich.
The book is so
So,
well, maybe that, I don't know.
I will leave you with this quote. Mr. Offerman huffs and puffs and blows as much billowing oratory as he has allowed, but the performance needs more outlandishness, more outrage, and more heft.
Ew.
Well, okay. See if it makes it in.
That is interesting.
And the book is famously, it was published 11 years after Toole's death.
Was it that long?
That was that long. And it was in the early 80s that it came out.
A lot went down in the 80s,
man. Oh, shoot. Look at the time. All right. Skipping everything else. But we're going to go right to the trivia question that we will be going to right now. I'm stalling for time as she opens it up. She's ready to go. Go with the trivia question. So just for our studio audience here, please don't belt out any answers. We will give the answer. We'll get chances to talk about it backstage and offstage.
I'm doing one on Parade.
Okay. Chelsea will know the answer.
Don't say the answer right now. So I'm not going to do the what Parade's about, because we will learn about that here shortly. But it was written in 1998 by Jason Robert Brown and direction by Hal Prince. Brown's score was rich and varied, and the cast led by Brent Carver was superb. But perhaps the material was too bleak to catch on in a big way, as fate shared by 1999's Marie Christine. Michael John Lachwiza's retelling of Medea. Who helped bring Jason Robert Brown and Hal Prince together? A. Daisy Prince. B. Alfred Urey. C. Evan Pappas. D. Carolee Carmello. Or E. Andrew Lippa.
There you go. That's a good question.
I found the choices were interesting.
Who brought this down?
I was like, oh, I mean, I knew what it was, but I was like, that's an interesting one.
There you go. All right. So we will have that answer to that question during Backstage at Offstage. So make sure you get the podcast and check it out. Here we go. We will take a little break. You know what? In my household during Thanksgiving, we never had green bean casserole. It was just something we didn't have.
Me neither.
I didn't even know it was a thing until later in life.
Me neither.
So consequently, there was no song about green bean casserole.
Really?
But there was this song.
Tuna casserole.
Tuna casserole.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin, with me, Lisa Sheps, and who else?
Me, Nicole Shiro.
And then the whole crew from Parade.
And then there's a party in the studio.
And I'm going to reintroduce them in just one little moment. But before we do, Liliana, could you please do me the great honor of choosing a number between 2 and 47, please?
Let me see. A number between 2 and 47?
That would be what I said.
42.
Ooh, okay.
Went down on the spectrum.
Okay, here we go. Why did you choose 42?
Because it's the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
All right, I like that answer.
Well, here it is. Let's see what you've chosen.
This is Jason Williams, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM.
Okay, I'm going to have to mix it up.
Jason.
He's all over the
place. He's all over the place in so many incarnations that he just pops up. Well, I love Jason,
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's introduce the folks for reintroduce the folks from Parade, shall we?
Who shall they be? Who are they?
We have Vincent Hooper. Hello, Vincent.
Hello.
Dale Sandish.
Hello.
Liliana Sweeten.
Hi.
And Chelsea Manassieri.
There we go. Good afternoon, everyone.
So I have the honor of directing this piece. So I, rather than interview myself, I made sure that Chelsea came with us today because you're a veritable expert on this show, right?
A little bit, yes.
So first of all, tell me why this show interests you so much.
The first time I heard a song from the show was in college. It was during a performance where the three women I was a theater major in college, uh-huh. And three women got together and
we'll learn more about that at Backstage at Offstage, right. So everybody should tune in for that.
And I heard these three women get together and they performed a song from Parade. They did uh-huh. The Factory Girls, and it was just the most haunting piece of music, and I had to find out what it was from. So I found out about Parade, and I found out about Jason Robert Brown, who I already loved because I loved Songs for a New World, which is another piece of his. And I got really into the music in Parade, but a couple years after that, I found out that it was actually based on a true story. And that, to me, was what was the most fascinating, because it's a really fascinating, really complicated plot. And it doesn't uh-huh. seem as if it could possibly be real, but it is. It's very, very close to what actually happened. So that's what, not only is the music great, but the story is just fascinating.
Without going into too terribly much detail, because as you mentioned, it's a detailed piece. What's the show about?
The show is about a murder trial that took place in Georgia in 1915 and resulted in the first lynching of a Jewish person in the United States.
Yep. And that man's name is Leo Frank.
Correct.
And actually, I've talked about him on the program before, because one of the results of his lynching was the formation of the Anti-Defamation League, which mm-hmm. is one of the most powerful and important anti-hate groups in the correct. Country. So clearly there's a lot of stuff going on. When we talked about putting this show together, it deals with like every ism out there. So we talked
that's
about...
That's a good way to describe that, yes. Lisa.
Clearly it's dealing with anti-Semitism. There's a racism issue mm-hmm. because, as you mentioned, not only was he the first Jewish man to be lynched, but non-people of color were just not lynched back in that day, really.
Correct. Yes.
So that was it's a pretty big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was something that had never happened before. So it was, I mean, it was an issue that was covered so widely in terms of like the news. People knew about it all over the country.
I was about to say it was the news sensation of it was not normal of that time.
Correct. It was
either.
Very sensational,
so, I mean,
the covering.
Every different angle was... This is a little more extreme. This is a little more.
It was a confluence of influences that happened at the same time by the political machinery in the Deep South, specifically in Georgia.
Yeah,
correct.
And that's sort of what drove everything. So, speaking of the political machinery, Dale, you play one of the characters that's in the forefront of that political machinery. What do you play?
I play District Attorney Hugh Dorsey, who has aspirations to become governor of the great state of Georgia.
Jeez.
Yeah,
and how'd he do in real life?
Well, he became the governor of the great state of Georgia. And his character takes some interesting turns. People say he's kind of evil or he's kind of oily, and but I see it more as he's just ambitious. He was very ambitious, and he knew how to run, how to work within that system of the political machine in Georgia.
Right, and that's actually timely in today's day.
Yes.
Like, how?
What? What are you talking about? We live in politics. This great utopian society.
Chelsea, tell us what role you're playing.
I am playing the role of Manola McKnight. Minnie was a servant, a maid, in the house of Leo Frank with his wife Lucille, and she actually signed an affidavit. She was coerced into signing an affidavit that was largely responsible for his conviction.
Right, as were most of the witnesses.
Correct.
They had their stories quite embellished in order to
there was
a lot of
tampering from the legal teams in terms of the testimonies that were given.
And Liliana Sweeten, what do you play? Who do you play?
I play Mary Fagan, the victim of the murder of which Leo Frank was convicted.
Right. So, she was a 13-year-old girl, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you're relatively close in age, are you not?
Pretty close, no.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how's that? I mean, I'm curious. It's like and we've not talked about this before. How's that feel for you, sort of having someone that could in many ways be you?
Well, it's strange in a lot of ways, Lisa, because at the same time that it's easy to find a lot of similarities in the character, being young, having, you know, a lot of dreams, being optimistic like myself, but at the same time leading such a different life. I mean, currently I'm in school, receiving an education, living a fairly comfortable life, but in her life, her family could not afford to send her to school, and so she had to work as a child laborer in a pencil factory for hours and hours a day, received very little money, and her life was just this endless drudgery that was cut so tragically short. So to see this relatable, youthful character whose life is cut so tragically short is just a really interesting juxtaposition, especially with my own life.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really, really well put. And actually, one of the lines that I think that Dale says is talks about how she was stuffing erasers in the ends of pencils, mm-hmm. eight or 10 hours a day
for ten pennies an hour.
Ten pennies mm-hmm. an hour.
Interesting fact about that is actually the day that she went to get her pay, the day that she was actually murdered, she had been laid off about a week before,
so
she was going to get her final pay. That was mm-hmm. her final paycheck.
Yeah, it was due to a shortage of copper sheets, I think.
Correct.
And Vincent, what do you play?
I play Jim Connolly.
Yeah, the state's star witness, actually, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
So actually, before you tell us mm-hmm. what Jim Connolly is all about, I think we can get a pretty good feel from him by hearing a little bit of his testimony. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're going to do that in the form of a song, correct?
Correct.
Correct. I knew I'd be right when I said it.
It's like you planned this. It's
okay. Crazy. Do you want to set
it
up
like
at all?
It's like you planned this.
This song is during the trial that is held for Leo Frank. And Jim Connolly is brought in as a witness by Dorsey to kind of coerce the jury into a certain direction.
Right. Okay. So we're going to hear Vincent Hooper singing a number from Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade.
He told me to watch the door, that's what he said, that's what he said. I should make sure no one came and interrupted. Well, I'd say once or twice a month, he'd tell me, Jim, you watch the door, I got a lady coming. I got a lady coming. Like I said, once or twice a month, it'd be a lady come to call. And he'd say, Jim, you watch the door, that's what he said. He told me to watch the door, that's what he said, that's what he said. I got a girl, she'll be coming up to see me, she's a very pretty girl. He said, don't let me catch you looking at Miss Mary Perkins, that's what he called, I think, Miss Mary Perkins. So when Miss Mary came to call, I kept my eyes down to the floor, 'cause Mr. Frank said not to look, that's what he said. Next thing, Mr. Frank is yelling something, so I run upstairs and open the door, and Mr. Frank looks up. He said, we're playing a game, that's what he said, and little Mary's kinda crumpled in the corner. He said, you don't understand, she didn't wanna play the game, and so I went and hit her. You see, I had to hit her. He told me I should go and look. He said she's acting like she's sick. And I said, Lord, that child is dead. That's what I said. And he said, no, no, it ain't my fault that girl is dead. He said, no, no, that's what he said. He said, no, no, and his eyes were wild and his face was red. He said, no, no, that's what he said. He said, gotta get her out, let's get her out, that's what he said, that's what he said. So I found me this old gunny sack and wrapped her. He said, you're a good boy, Jim, I know you won't tell no one nothing, here's $100. I found $100. And so I put her on my back, we took the elevator down. He said, just throw her on the ground, that's what he said. And he said, no, no, there ain't no reason I should hang. He said, no, no, that's what he said. He said, no, no,
There ain't no reason I should hang. You got money in your pocket, and there's plenty more that I got. Wealthy friends and family, and a wife who's dumb and fat. I got rich folks out in Brooklyn if I need somewhere to go. And these stupid rednecks never gonna know. No, it ain't my fault that girl is dead. I said no, no, that's what he said.
Oh my God. Woo. How wonderful is that?
Yeah, now,
listening to you now, hearing playing the piano, I am like, can't wait for the Sitz Probe to hear that song. Because the richness of the orchestra is going to be just incredible. That is that's an incredible song.
It's really fun.
And so Jim Conley was the chief witness against Leo Frank.
Correct.
And he was indeed somebody that worked at the factory, yes?
Yes, yes. He was actually one of the lowest levels of employee at the factory. And he had a very interesting relationship with Leo in that, at least he says, that Leo would give him signals via sound through his floor of, like, when to come up and when not to and what to do. And he was just a very interesting guy. Like, he wasn't very well liked. He was known for being a drunkard. And, like, even his fellow African-American employees didn't like him, which is, like, crazy.
Incredibly smart.
Yes, yes. I mean, he could read and write. This is a brilliant guy. I think he played into the stereotypes of African Americans at that time, too.
Right. So we're going to take a break.
Yes.
I want to talk about that aspect of the show when we come back, because it's a huge aspect of the mm-hmm. show, and extremely timely right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll take a little break. We'll come, we'll talk about some local stuff, and then we'll finish up with more of Parade. So what are we going to listen to? Oh, this is also from Parade. Here we go. This is one of the prettier songs, lighter songs.
Don't you think that's pretty music?
Here's the crazy thing. We are so far behind time once again. Here's what I'm going to do. Basically, I'm just going to say locally, Streetcar Named Desire, who was on our show last week, the review in the Chronicle came out today. It was lovely.
The review in the Statesman the other day was unbelievable. I got to figure out how to get it in. That was what I was going to say local in the Wild Party, but you can find stuff on nowplayingaustin.com. Yeah.
So we're just going to run right into today in theater history. Hopefully. Where is it? There it is. Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, everybody will remember this. Back in 1882.
That was a very, very cold year.
It was the world premiere of Gilbert and Sullivan's operetta, Iolanthe, which I think they're doing
Iolanthe. 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 I was going to say, is someone doing that or do it? It's not one that's done as often.
Soon.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that out there lately.
Yep.
Exciting.
And then, let's see, in 1952, on this date, a little show by the name of, well, it's the longest, single longest interrupted show in history. Anybody guess what it is? Longest uninterrupted? Yeah, just go for it.
I was just okay. Waiting for you to say.
Well, if you build a better one, the world will beat something to your door.
The Fantastic?
Mousetrap.
No, Mousetrap. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Play, not musical. I'm like, yeah, we got those later.
25,000th performance was held on November 18th. 2012. And in 2002, Queen Elizabeth attended the 50th anniversary.
I remember when she did that.
Of it. Yeah.
She invited me, but I couldn't make it.
This is also when the hit Broadway musical based on The Princess and the Pea opened.
I love this musical.
Once Upon a Mattress.
Yes.
And it's the composer was Mary Rogers.
Yes.
Related to one Richard Rogers as
yes.
the daughter. And she got a Tony nom for it.
She
first
should.
Time out
it's
as composer.
It's a fun musical. It's just fun.
And it was also the and I didn't realize this was the Broadway debut of Carol Burnett.
Yes. Well, it was on the TV first, yes, and then she went and did it on...
in the 60s, and then again
yeah.
in the
yeah,
70s.
It came back.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Right, but this was her Broadway debut.
Yes, because I had to stop and go, wait, but I forgot. She did do it on Broadway after it was on the TV. I had to just stop for a minute.
Yeah,
think.
Well, yeah, the television is not Broadway.
No, I know that, but that's not what I was crazy. Saying. I agreed with you. I was...
I know.
Oh.
I love it when you agree with me. This is also the anniversary of the death of Jerry Schoenfeld, one of the Schubert Organization people. And this is a musical written, Frank Wildhorn, because I have to go. It always comes back to Frank Wildhorn.
He's a Texan. We can do that. He wrote Frank the Civil War. I, you know.
Yes, he did.
Great musical. I'm sorry.
But he also wrote Dracula the Musical.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Not
that was that was set to come into 2002, but before that could happen, the blood-sucking tale, The Dance of the Vampires, snuck into Broadway, and so it finally didn't open until 2004. So
by then, vampires were
in 2001, on this date, it closed at La Jolla Playhouse in California. Birthdays today, Ricardo Montalban.
Oh, yeah. What a...
He sleeps on
you don't know who
beautiful
he is?
Corinthian leather.
Nope. Oh, poor, we're old. Vincent doesn't know who he is.
He's old. Also, John Larroquette.
Oh, I was just talking about him last night going, what's he up to? I love that guy.
And Christina Applegate.
Oh, hello. Okay.
And it is locally, it is the birthday of one Travis Gauden. Gauden. Who happens to be in the cast of Parade.
Whoop, boon, Annie Vesse.
So you will be very happy to hear the song that we're going to go out. We're going to listen to a little of Dracula. But instead of Dracula the Musical, we're going to listen to Dracula Das Musical.
Oh, it's like Rocky Das Musical.
Dracula Das Musical.
So lang schon liegt der Fluch.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Scheps and Nicole Shiro. We're talking to the cast of Parade, and specifically Vincent Hooper, Liliana Sweetin, Dale Sandish, and Chelsea Manassieri. Manassieri.
Just be it.
It's like I should just do it the way I did it in my head before.
I was like, when you do it Italian, you do it right.
Manassieri.
Yes. Yeah, see, you're on fire when you're doing it.
I need to do the hands. So we are
as Guido continues,
vastly running out of time. So let's talk about when we talk about isms. One of the tough things here about this piece is the racism piece, because it is widely understood that Jim Connolly actually did do this murder. So what had happened in real time was, you know, we were in the Deep South, you know. African Americans were the people that were always pointed at when anything went wrong. And at this time, they had, at the very beginning, they had two people in custody, Newt Lee, who was the night watchman, an African American man, and Leo Frank. And it was decided to go after Leo Frank for basically political reasons. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel? So I'm basically talking to Chelsea and Vincent here. You're both people of color. How has this experience in working on this piece, especially in today's environment, how do y'all square that up? How do y'all work with that? How does it feel for you?
Well, I think that, you know, with every show that you have like this, there's the opportunity to kind of bring awareness to things that are going on now and kind of just open up people's eyes to a different point of view, especially in the song like Rumbling and Rolling. Mm-hmm. Some of the lyrics in that are very poignant, I think.
Right, and charged.
Yes, yes. And so I, at least personally, I try and kind of hit those moments a little bit and just give them a little extra gas just to help that message get across that, like, hey, guys.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. I think that it's a little difficult just because the show does deal with racism, but racism isn't really the central conceit of the show. And I feel like the show deals with racism and anti-Semitism as two separate issues, even though they're both kind of branches of the same systemic tree. But I feel like there are definitely points in the show where Jason Robert Brown, who obviously is not black, but he did write some really profound, really solid moments in this show that really just kind of, for me as a person of color, that just make me go, yes, you know, that's exactly. Yeah.
I wish
nailed
I had
it,
a camera,
you know,
for the way you emphatically did the yes with that.
I find it interesting because it isn't really, you know, specifically the main themes are not really anti-Semitism or racism, but it's really how different groups use the system for their own good.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Jim Connolly was extremely good at using the racist system of the South to keep him out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So I want to play a song that we recorded last night at rehearsal, and this is actually the closing of the show. And it's bookended with very the music. How would you? It's like uplifting music about the South and Dixieland,
right?
And it's ironically presented in our piece. So let's listen to the cast of Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade singing the finale of the piece.
I go to fight for these old hills behind me.
truth that will endure in the city.
Okay, you guys sound like more than 22.
Yeah, I was like, that was way more than 22.
That's amazing. It's amazing. It's so cool to listen to.
We actually had a few cast members who weren't even singing in that
right.
in that part of the show.
Too. Right, because the leads, the people that are actually the court, like Leo and Lucille and everybody, you aren't singing this. Mm-hmm. Dale, this is a concert version. What do we mean by that?
Well, a concertized version would be not full staging and no scenery per se, and maybe some minimalistic costume suggestions, props, perhaps a few things that just suggest it. But basically, it allows the actors to carry their books if they need to refer to the music or the script during the performance.
Yeah, so it's basically showcasing the piece, so it's not a fully staged production. And so that's what we're doing at Ground Floor Theater. Who can tell folks where they can go to get more information?
Chelsea.
Somebody do it. So close.
I don't care who does it.
You can go, for more information, you can visit groundfloortheater.org.
Okay, and when does the show open? We're painfully aware of this.
It opens next Thursday, that is December 3rd.
Mm-hmm. And Liliana, how long does it play?
It plays until the 5th. There are four performances?
Four performances.
Yes. Two on Saturday.
Two on mm-hmm. Saturday. So for those of you, I actually was speaking to the folks over at the JCC, and they're very, just to perpetuate a stereotype, they're very happy that we had a matinee.
Oh, that's funny, Lisa.
Very happy that we had a matinee. God, thank you guys for coming on. I hope y'all can join us backstage where we can learn a little bit more about you.
Yeah. Yes.
That would be groovy.
Yes.
Is that good?
Yes, yep. Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome. That was Vincent Hooper, Liliana Sweeten, Dale Sandish, and Chelsea Manassietti. I just have to put the Italian on it.
When you become Italian, you're good on it.
From Ground Floor Theater's production of Parade, opening a week from Thursday on the 3rd through the 5th. For more information, groundfloortheater.org. And back from the show, we are going to play A Hammer of Justice.
Who's gonna stop the rising?
I have to say that was kind of odd interviewing, part of being interviewer and interviewee all at the same time.
I said I would switch it up and help you. You didn't want me a part of it today.
I'm
Lisa.
A control freak, but you're also part of the group too. But this was a fun show.
It was a very fun show. I really liked this show. So to find out that that you chose to do this with Ground Floor Theater really made me excited. And now that I've gotten to hear all of you as a cast and get bits and pieces, put the people that are doing it behind it, I'm even more excited.
PDI, actually.
PDI.
Pretty darn incredible.
Yes. Oui.
So I'm looking forward to stepping backstage and learning a little bit more about these folks.
Yes, because I have some questions that I want to get into with background and story, but I couldn't talk about them because it goes with the trivia.
We're going to do that later.
So it's exciting.
So remember, folks, those are for you that are listening on the podcast. You will stick by and listen to Backstage at Offstage. For those of you on the broadcast, stand by for Austin Monitor News there next, followed by another Bottle Down with Mark Rayshap, the wine monsieur of all connoisseurs.
And he's out there.
He's out there. He's drinking.
Away.
They're like, they've got their clothes off. They're running around.
You know, it is a holiday.
It is a holiday.
He's just sprucing it up.
It is a holiday. So remember, like us on Facebook because we have Insecurity.
Uh-huh.
Stitch us on Stitcher because we are coming unhinged. We need stitching. And tweet us on Twitter because we're little birds.
Tweet, 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 tweet,
tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, tweet, Tweedly-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-d
go to offstageonair.com, enter your email, and we just arrived. Lisa and Nicole are delivered in your mailbox. Oh, Mark's running. He's giving us a year.
He's got he's getting it at the 40-second delay. thanks, everybody. And Nicole and I will be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And in the meantime, have a great Thanksgiving and a jolly holiday.
Why, it's a jolly holiday with Mary.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Cacophony the Musical, the story of four people who speak in verse but not saying the same thing all at the same time. It's a very confusing show. But we are backstage now, sitting amongst the backstage stuff in the alleyway behind the theater where the dumpsters and the recycle bins are and these stray kitty cats.
The fog machine almost blew up tonight.
Fog machine did almost blow up tonight. That was crazy.
That was crazy.
So we have everybody that we had here before. And a lot of the rules that we were following before don't exist. And so I'm not able to like fully promote my own show when I'm over the air. But now I can. Go see Parade, you folks.
I was just about to say, can I say it?
Go
see Parade.
Go see Parade. These people are incredible, and I'm so honored to work with them.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to say something. Go see Parade because Lisa Sheps has done an amazing thing, not only with this production, but with this theater. And I only get to thank you here and there when you're not here and I'm hosting the show because you don't let me do this. But I have to tell you right now, I am honored to call you one of my best friends, to call you my family, and for the things that you do for this city, especially in the world of arts. Hats off to you, Lisa. I'm very excited about this production. I am very excited about what you're doing.
I'm for clapped. Thank you.
I heart you. I have like tears in my eyes. I This is awesome.
I'm thankful for you.
I'm thankful for you.
Okay.
And I can celebrate that on Thursday. There happens to be a day coming up.
Let's get the answer to the trivia question, which is really good.
It is good.
So give us the abbreviated version of the question.
Because I want to talk about this, but I couldn't talk about this. And I was like,
okay,
darn.
Go. Do it.
So we're talking about Parade in 1998. Who helped bring Jason Robert Brown and Hal Prince together? A, Daisy Prince. B, Alfred Urey. C, Evan Pappas. D, Carolee Carmello. Or E, Andrew Lippa.
Okay, Dale, do you know who?
Yes, I do.
Say it.
Daisy Prince.
Daisy Prince. Mm-hmm. Vincent?
Daisy Prince.
Daisy Prince. Oh. Chelsea Manassieri.
I was gonna say something totally different.
Really?
But now I'm not sure.
Who were you gonna say?
I've just been wrong. I was gonna say Carolee Carmello.
Carolee Carmello. Mm.
I was gonna say Daisy Prince after Stephen Sondheim turned the show down.
So, yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's Daisy Prince.
And it is Daisy Prince because
I don't know who the second person or the third person was.
I didn't know the answer.
Evan Pappas.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
He was a performer and then turned director, I believe.
Oh, I did not know that. And Carolee Carmello was the original.
She played Lucille.
Yeah, she was started as Leo Frank's wife. She and I have performed a lot in the same theaters in Schenectady.
And she is a personal friend of one Dale Sandish.
Mm-hmm. I know Schenectady.
Yeah, at SLOC, Schenectady Light Opera Company. Oh, it's where she used to do a lot of theater, and I've done some
stuff there.
She
and I did
there.
Baby together at the Casa Mañana Theater in Fort Worth.
That's in Fort Worth, yeah.
I like to call that Cowtown.
Interesting like enough, Hal Prince was related to the Leo Frank and the Pencil family was his great uncle.
No kidding.
Yep.
Interesting.
Really? Who worked, and that's why Daisy knew was the story and was very excited when he was writing. And that's how, when Sondheim turned it down, she said, go to Jason Robert Brown. Yeah. He wanted to write about this because of his family's connection to the pencil factory and the story.
And I don't know if I mentioned it on
the
show.
I pulled something out. How about that?
That's cool.
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but I have a very dear friend that I grew up with. His name is Nick Chris. He lives in Paris. When he got our email blast about the show, he emailed me back and he said, Jack Slayton is his great uncle.
Really?
Yes. Oh, and they all through his childhood, he kept hearing about Governor Slayton and the fact that their relative ruined his political career to save a man's life.
That's so interesting because it was It was their great uncle too. What's up with the great uncle aspect?
Well, it's
interesting.
It's the GUA.
And ironically, my
great uncle aspect.
My great aunt was listening today to the radio.
Oh, there.
If you want to add the greatness to all the great.
And my great grandmother came from Poland.
There you go.
There you go.
So did mine.
There you go.
So
I have a question for this group. Where do Polish people keep their armies?
Poland.
In their sleeveys.
Yep.
Okay.
I liked my answer. Poland.
Did you get the answer to your question that you said you wanted to talk about?
It was Daisy. The whole I couldn't talk about the connection. I couldn't say, oh, well, Stephen Sondheim turned down the role, and did you know that Hal Prince was related? I couldn't go there because then you would have known that it was Daisy Prince that hooked them up. But yes.
Chelsea Manassieri, I'm most anxious to talk to you and find out what your story is. Where did you come from?
Where did I come from?
Where'd you grow up?
I was actually born in New Jersey, but I grew up in Austin.
Where in New Jersey?
I was born in Newark.
I was born in Neptune, Jersey Shore Medical Center.
I used to fly out of Newark.
Look at that.
That's where I
fly in. Small world.
I used to smell Newark when I was
driving. You can smell it from here.
You can still smell Newark.
Actually, it's interesting when you drive down the garden, the New Jersey Turnpike from New York, and you see the skyline of Newark, it's huge.
It is.
It just looks very small next to Manhattan.
Exactly. Well, everything looks small next to Manhattan.
They have a nice art center?
Performing arts center in Newark.
So at what age did you leave New Jersey?
I only lived there for a short period of time, and then my family and I moved a lot when I was a kid, and we moved to Austin originally in 1997.
And did you go to school with Vincent?
I did not. I am actually a lot older than Vincent, even though I know I look young.
I was like, say you do not look it.
But Vincent and I have performed together before. We've done shows together.
Yeah, you were both in Were you in Hairspray?
I was not in Hairspray. We were both in Passing Strange together.
Passing Strange.
And we were both in Chicago together. Thank you.
Excellent.
Gotcha. Where'd you go to school?
I went to a very, very small college in Michigan.
Michigan.
Which is where my family all still lives. Like, we have moved up there.
What part of
college.
Michigan?
I was about to say she
We live
do
in
it.
Rochester Hills, which is like...
And I love she did it back.
Yeah. Which is where I'm about to go to visit them for Christmas.
My family's from Muskegon.
Really?
Yeah.
God, small world. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Michigan. I'm sorry. I prefer Texas.
Well, because that's why you're
here. All you do is curse there. They got snow. And that's a four-letter word.
Exactly.
It is. So you went to college in Michigan. Did you study theater? You mentioned earlier in the show that you
I have a Bachelor of Arts in Musical Theater.
Oh, yeah. In musical theater.
Correct.
Lovely.
Yes.
So what are some of your favorite roles?
Like Vincent mentioned, we did Chicago together. I played Mama Morton, which was so fun.
I bet you would be a great Mama Morton.
I was just about to say, I bet you'd be really good.
Definitely one of my favorite roles.
That's something you can mature into as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm definitely a little bit young.
I need to get on my soapbox for a minute. I've been very upset with the producer or the promoters of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Not because NeNe Leakes is in it right now. Whatever, let her in it. But she's been doing a lot of PR and she's everywhere. And they keep saying the role made famous by Queen Latifah, and I'm like, no, the movie it was, and I'm like, I actually Twittered her back and wrote into the producers of Dr. Oz. That was the last time I had heard. I was flipping channels and it was the fifth time I heard it. I was so angry. So I just want to let you know, you agree with me, right?
I do. I agree with you.
I feel validated because she didn't get back to me.
How dare
but,
she?
Yeah, isn't that annoying? I'm like, it was made famous in the movie.
Correct.
Who made it famous and was nominated for Tony Award in the Broadway?
In the original Broadway.
Oh my God, I cannot think of her
what
name
is her
right
name?
Now. My God, the whole original Jerry Orbach, Cheetah Rivera, Gwen Verdon.
Well, I was referring to the
yeah, but I'm trying to think of Mama Morton, the original.
Well, somebody will IBDB it, and we'll get that. I, by the way, do have the IBDB app on my phone.
I didn't even know there was an app.
There is an IBDB app, and I've got it. Awesome. Well, that's cool. So would you say that would be your favorite role that you've done?
It's definitely up there. It's definitely up there. I've played a lot of interesting roles. I've played men. I've played children. I've played old people. I've played younger people.
You played dogs.
I don't think I've ever played a dog. Okay. I played a mouse.
Oh,
played
a bird. That's almost a dog.
I played a chicken once. I also played. I did a production of a play called Crumbs from the Table of Joy, and I played Lily Ann Green, and that's probably one of my favorite roles to date.
I like that title.
So is that a straight play?
It's a straight play, yes. Yeah. It's all about race relations in early 1900s New York. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Fabulous play.
Awesome. And how long have you been in Austin? Oh, you've been in Austin since for...
Cumulatively, I've been here 18 years or
which
so.
Which is strange. I'm surprised that we have not... Our paths had not crossed until
I know.
Recently.
Well, I do. I tend to work with the same people a mm-hmm. lot, so it's nice to... It's fun to branch out and work with new people.
Well, that rocks. Go ahead.
We Mary... have. McCarty.
Oh, that's
yes.
Right.
Thank you, right. Internet.
Dun, dun, right. dun. Now, I don't know how I grew up.
Dale, you
this.
And I actually go back a long way.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Back to New York.
You guys know each other
Chicago
from New York?
Days. Yes. Well, you say what our connection is.
Well, we did some industrial shows together, some
we
corporate
did.
Events.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend from high school, I got him a job at a place called Carabiner.
Carabiner.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was doing a show for Carabiner and I introduced him to the producer of that show and he got a job and now he's vice president of something and something for a big uppity-uppity company.
And he is my ex-business partner. So
yes.
Jeff and I have gone way, way back. Our first show together was in the mid-80s.
Yes, Jeff Youngs.
And he had Youngs Communication. And I had Aileron Creative, and we merged our two companies to form Concentrix. Mm-hmm. And
Concentrix
we actually hired Dale to work on Royal Caribbean, actually much later. And so, mm-hmm. so our history goes back way back.
Was he in the Bahamas for the
no,
on
that
fire
was,
Junkachu people?
No, that was prior to Jeff Youngs.
Oh, okay. Because I would have loved another.
But now you grew up in Grand Isle.
Grand Island, New York.
New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to call it Grand Isle because it
they
sounds...
They used to call it a Grand Isle.
I was like back...
Well, that back when I... Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
If you're living in the Day of Parade, you can call
it actually called
Grand
Cinderella
Island.
Island originally.
But that... What is this? What is the town that most people would know that's close to that?
Buffalo, New York.
I've heard of that.
Or Niagara Falls.
My dad went to Niagara University.
That's where I went to college.
Oh, my gosh.
Graduated in 1983.
I have his ring, and they just did a memorial mass for him like 3 weeks ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's funny.
Crazy.
Yeah, my mom's current boyfriend is his college roommate. That's a Niagara University graduate.
There you go.
Yeah.
And did you do theater in high school?
I did.
College?
Yes. I played. Everybody has a story. Maybe if they did a show in high school. You know, we're not old enough to play these adult characters in high school. But of course, I played Billy Bigelow.
Of course. In one of my favorite plays of all time.
It's a beautiful musical, actually. Yeah. But I like the music very much. But there I am singing the soliloquy about having children and everything. I was 17 years old, you know, with these mutton chops that I pasted onto the side of my face. It was ridiculous. But
even fake facial hair is fun, especially at that age.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I used to wear it home after rehearsal because I liked riding the bus with my fake hair. That was really cool.
That's phenomenal.
Now, you also were in the national tour of Titanic when it first went out. Did you not? Were you not?
I played
and
Earl
somebody
Bryan.
Was just telling me today, was it you talking about the concert version of Titanic that was just happening? Somebody was talking about
we
that.
We did talk. I think I may have sent you an email. We weren't talking about it. I think I may have sent an email.
But I saw you when you traveled through Chicago in that role.
Played the Lyric Opera House.
Right. And you played the Telegraph operator, right?
Yeah, Harold Bride.
Yeah, which and I don't say this often. I'm hypercritical. I did not like that show at all. But the one little bright spot was Dale Sandish.
Thank you.
There's some good music in that
show.
I think there's some really...
Mori Jetson's score
I was just
going to
say, first of all, it's Mori Jetson.
Yeah.
And he wrote 9.
Yes.
So the man can do no wrong.
Yeah.
9 is unbelievable. But there is actually some good... I think there's some really beautiful music in
it's
that
It's
very
choral-driven.
Mm-hmm.
The opening is reminiscent of what we're doing now, Parade.
Yeah, true.
Seeing the ship and it was hard to do that show, not as a performer, but to put that show together. They were criticized because there were too many little stories going on.
Right.
First class, second class, third class.
But that's what the Titanic
was. That's what it
was,
yeah. But the opulence of the ship was never really expressed theatrically because you couldn't do it. I mean, you just could not get those different levels. On Broadway, they had the lifts.
I was about to say, they had the lifts that went up
hydraulics,
and down.
Yeah. So they did an amazing job that way. But on the road, we had one wench that lifted up. She was very strong. That lifted up the stage. Half of the stage went up, and then people were sliding down into the water. It was very effective that way, I thought. Simple theatrical tricks, I think, created it much more effectively than doing all the expensive stuff on Broadway, where they rebuilt a theater for that show.
Yep.
But
sure.
The Titanic was just in the news for a cover-up for the investigation, everyone who was cleared, who built the ship. And I guess there's about, they found all these documents, and I want to say Churchill and a whole bunch of people, and they're showing the cover up from the aftermath of that, of all the people they let out. That just came out in the news like 2 days ago,
another day ago.
It's very interesting.
There were even some conspiracy theories.
Oh, well,
about
you should read this article, because I'm sure it's got them swirling.
You know what? I think the iceberg did it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's what I think. Hey, Vincent, what's your story? You're a fascinating young man, and you've got a little bit of talent.
Just a wee bit. You might go somewhere. Someday.
You grew up in Round Rock, Texas, yes?
Correct. Yeah.
That's a little north of here.
I like to call it
South Dallas.
South Dallas.
It's pretty far up there.
Probably felt that way when you were growing up there, because it was so disconnected. We're almost all merged together.
Yeah.
Did you theater there in the high schools?
Yeah.
And did you do like every year? I'm assuming you did at least one musical.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming. So we spoke yesterday, the day before. You have plans to move to New York in a year or so, and you're about to go on the road. So theater is always like, it sounds like that it's been there for you and sending you forward, propelling you forward was the word I was trying to come
pushing
up
you out into the real world.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of weird, I guess, like getting into it, just because it wasn't something I was like, I'm going to start doing theater because that's what I want to do for a career. It was just kind of like, I was picking my electives for eighth grade, and I was like, okay, like, what haven't I taken? And I had taken pretty much everything. And so I was like, I'll do musical theater and theater one. Fine. And then I started doing it, and I was like, yo, this is pretty fun. Like, I guess I'll keep doing this for a while. And then once I got to like junior year, I think I did Ragtime at Zach. And so I was like, oh
cool.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know if I saw that production. You were
I love
in
Ragtime.
Zach, too,
I love
were you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a great idea, but Jen Venske just texted me and I lost my train of thought. I blame Jen.
Jen.
Blame Jen. And actually, I need to do a quick shout out to Jen Venske, who is stage managing this.
Yes.
And this is her. She has never stage managed before.
She
is not a theater person.
Really?
But I saw her. She wants to learn. She seemed to have an aptitude, and she is rocking the party, wouldn't she?
Yeah. Let me tell you, stage managing is not easy to just come in and do if you have not done it.
I would not know anything about that. Although I did, you know, again, shout out to Jen. I gave her when I thought she might be good at it, I gave her a couple of books on stage management. And I said, take a look at these and tell me what you think. She went home and read both of them that night.
That's phenomenal.
I want to do it. I said, okay, sold. You're hired. Mm-hmm. So I'm really thrilled with her.
That's a rare breed. Go Jen Venske. Yeah. I am like, yeah.
But did you know, were you always singing before you started to do it? Before you, eighth grade elective, were you singing?
No. My first trade, I guess you could say, is actually drawing. I do that a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Drawings. Yes.
yeah, so I did that, and then
pen
I guess
and ink?
I kind of.
Kind of drawings?
Yeah.
Do you still
paper,
do it?
Pencil. Uh-huh.
Good.
Oh, that's really
are you
cool.
going to draw me a picture so I can put it in my refrigerator?
Of what?
Look,
what do you want?
Vincent did this.
If you give me a picture that you want.
Draw the dog.
I'll do
Sophie
it.
The dog.
So Sophie loves to pose.
She, well, yeah. So that's cool. And you're about to embark on a tour.
Can we talk
about it?
Yeah.
What is it?
I'm getting ready to head out to Reno, Nevada to do a production of Footloose out there.
Footloose.
Yeah, everybody
comes actually Footloose. My third production of that show.
I've said you've done it multiple times.
Yeah, I did
you know?
It in high school when I played Rin, and I did it at Summerstock and I played Reverend Shaw. And then now I'm playing Garvin
or
somebody.
Oh, that's right. I saw
you
here.
I was about to say, you and I, didn't we go together to see it at Summerstock?
Don't know. DK.
I think we might have.
DK.
I think so.
So Lily Anna...
Yes,
this
Lisa.
Is our second show together.
Yes, it is. I was here, last summer with my theater, the theater company I work with, Girl Improved.
Right, which is also at
which we like to talk about all the time.
We talk about you guys.
We talk about you guys all the time.
I'm touched. I hope it's good things.
It is awesome things.
Well, as a matter of fact, we talked about
awesome.
You last week because Taylor Flanagan was on the show.
Taylor.
And we were talking about some of the stuff she does. And I said, well, have you heard of Girl Improved? And she said, Lisa, we were both mentors on the last show together. Yeah. I went, oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then we talked about how awesome all of you are and incredible and what you do.
So you, both you and your sister are like incredible young phenoms in the theater, correct?
You could say that. I appreciate that.
You do a lot of different things. You wear many hats. You don't just perform. I mean...
That's true. I directed my first show last summer with Girl Improved.
So yes.
Was, yep.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive. I wasn't directing at 13, and I knew this was what I was doing. So.
And you're getting ready to direct your second show.
Actually,
I've
written
show.
A show that's about to be produced. Oh, my goodness. Is it late March and early April, I believe, is when that's coming up.
Tell people where they, if they want to learn more about you and Girl Improved, where do they go?
Oh, yay. I forget that I get to shamelessly self-promote.
Self-promote.
Yeah. You can definitely go to girlimproved.com to learn more about our company as a whole, our mission statement, our projects, and auditioning for our next show, which I wrote, hint, hint. Please,
which is called what and what is it about?
It's called The Puppeteer's Handbook. It is a fantasy piece that's kind of about... I don't want to get too meta here, but it's about two friends whose paths had split early on in life, and when they're reunited, when they've both changed a whole lot under some strange supernatural circumstances, and they're forced to work together moving forwards.
Cool. So now what grade are you in right this very second?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm at ACC right now doing the dual enrollment,
right?
High school college program, and I think I'm enrolled as a high school sophomore legally.
Right, because you're homeschooled.
Yes, I'm homeschooled. The grades thing is hard for me.
Right. Yeah, and I knew going into that. But ACC, you're... Go ahead.
Sorry, I was homeschooled my entire life. I was homeschooled from fourth grade all the way through high school. So, that's so great. For homeschoolers. Sorry.
Yeah, for homeschoolers.
And I did high school and college and did it both at the same time. And I think it was one of the best decisions I ever met.
One of the great things
no
is
matter
you,
how hard.
You're
so
always the
impressive.
Valedictorian.
And the interesting thing is, I lived in a home, I went to school, and I've been to college.
So voila!
It's like it's crazy how this all like meshes together.
I actually went home after school.
Well, I came from school to here.
Well, I am so glad that you guys joined us backstage. It was a really fun show. We could talk forever. We've gone long as we usually do. Mm-hmm. Anything anybody wants to plug or anything before we sign off and say goodbye?
Come see Parade, please do it.
Come see Parade. Yes, you don't want to miss it. It's going to be fantastic.
Come see Parade.
Come see everything at the Ground Floor Theater.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm afraid
Show
Dale
up.
Had the One correct up. Answer.
One up to all of us.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us backstage amongst the mice and the cats.
And the broken fog machine.
And the broken fog machine. And by mice and cats, I mean the mouse that Chelsea played and Larry Katz,
She's
our doorman.
She's wearing a suit right now.
Yeah.
Well, see you guys later. Break a leg on the show. All of us should break a leg. Break many legs. Adios.
But thank you so much for something between ridiculous.